Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., also known as Uncle Marv and the Man in the Van. And I am here with another great episode for you to listen to. I've got they're not a new vendor, but some of you probably have not heard of them, and we'll find out the reasons why in a little bit. But I've got a couple of gentlemen here from Connect Me Voice that we're going to be talking about voice over IP. And you know how much I love VoIP services in the last 18 months, so we're going to dig into that. But before we get started, I want to do one quick thing. I want to read an email that was a response to a question I had. I know that some of you don't believe me that I do poke around on the Facebook a little bit, and I was witnessing a conversation that some techs were having about the old W-9 form. And it's getting, I guess, more and more common that clients are asking for us as technicians to fill out a W-9, mainly because their accountant or CPA tells them that they need to get it from every single vendor. I get that a lot of times when I'm going into office buildings, and not only do they want my W-9, they want a certificate of insurance, all that good stuff. But of course, the arguments always turn out that if you are not a sole proprietor or if you're incorporated, should you give a W-9 and can you refuse and all of that stuff? So I asked my good friend Laura Adams, and many of you will remember her from the podcast that I did, The Money Girl, Laura Adams. And I just simply sent her a question. I, of course, have the answer from my own accountant who just tells me to give it to anybody because it's no big deal. But I asked her for a second opinion. So I just sent her the question and she basically responded. And she says, "Hey, Marvin, this is a great question. Unless an independent contractor has Inc. in their company name, a client may not know that they are incorporated. Also, there are LLCs that choose to be taxed as a corporation, even though the company name includes LLC. So the purpose of the W-9 is to prove a company's taxation status because it's not always obvious to the clients. If you ticked incorporated on the form, the client should know not to send a 1099. But if a corporation doesn't want to fill out a W-9, one option is to send them their articles of incorporation instead. However, if you're going to that trouble, why not just submit the W-9 and I will end the email there, but that's basically, I think, a really good answer. I've just gotten to the point where if people have to ask, I send it. I do have Inc. in my name if I give everybody the whole name, and some people understand that and some don't, but a lot of times they just ask for all vendors, so I just send the W-9. It's a little form. You just fill it out once, sign it, and send it. No big deal. So just wanted to respond to that. And if you guys have any questions that I can ask of any of my guests, even if they're past guests, go ahead and send them to me and I'll get them right along. So I wanted to pass that on. And since we don't do sponsors anymore and I don't have anything else to go over with housekeeping or announcements, we're going to get right to the show. So as mentioned earlier, I'm joined by two gentlemen with Connect Me Voice. I am joined by Scott Seltzer, who is the founder and CEO, and Rafi Jamgachian, who is the channel chief. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Very good, thanks. How are you, Marvin?
Yeah, very good. So I need to start with a disclaimer because I just started selling voice. And when I say just, meaning in the last, I think, 13 months, 14 months is basically how long I've done it. I avoided it for a very long time. I just assumed my scope of expertise was in network support. Didn't want to deal with phones, just like I didn't want to deal with running cable and stuff like that. So my entry into the voice over IP space has only been a little bit. So I wanted to get that disclaimer out. I also need to let everybody as a listener know that I haven't signed up with you guys. I haven't done anything with you guys, but I have heard your name in ASCII. So when the call came to my office, I knew the name and said, I know these guys and I can have them on the show. So I wanted to get that disclaimer out there and let everybody know that. I also want to go ahead and say before we get started that there is an upcoming webinar that you guys are going to be doing for ASCII members. And that That's is right. going to be this Thursday, if I'm not correct, right?
That's right.
All right. And what's going to be happening in that webinar?
So the main thrust of the webinar, which is going to be at 2 o'clock Eastern time, will be really on what the benefits of partnering with Connect Me Voices, what our differentiators are. We're going to talk a little bit about that, I think, today. But really, how to take voice, sell voice as an MSP. Like most, like you, like I was as an MSP, voice wasn't our main bread and butter. It's not what we're structured to do necessarily, but it's a great way to potentially add revenue to what you're already getting on a recurring basis.
All right. And the title of that webinar, I believe, is, it's a long one. It's Using VoIP to Add Significant Profit and Keep Out Competition.
Yep.
Sounds exactly simple right. enough. Okay. So as I was digging into the background and getting a little history, it's interesting. You guys have actually been around since, what was it, 2001?
Well, in many ways, we've been around since a lot longer ago than that.
All right.
company was founded as American Voicemail Network in the early 90s.
Okay.
Basically, it was voice messaging and sort of started out as a project in the basement and sort of evolved over the course of time in the 90s. And we developed our own technology and we were sold to a dot-com startup, and the dot-com startup fun days of 1999, and around 2001 is when we emerged as Connect Me Voice.
Okay. Now, have you always been a partner-centric company?
So in the early 2000s, we built hosted PBX technology. It wasn't VoIP yet.
Okay.
That wasn't really ready for prime time yet, at least not in my view. And so it was basically a hosted PBX that just went out to general telephones. And at that point, we were almost completely just a technology provider. We provided technology for other companies that would go out and sell it, commercialize it. And around 2010 is when we got into the VoIP game and started developing that and put out our own product. And we found through the course of time that really the VoIP product is best served through, in my view, IT service providers, because they understand the network, they know the network, they can make sure the network is ready for voice over IP. And that's what we started to really focus in on the channel.
Okay. So, Scott, as the founder and CEO, when you were doing the hosted PBX and stuff, when you started to make the transition into VoIP, was it because you saw that it was a way to kind of corner a market? Was it a pricing thing? What was it that kind of got you moving in that direction?
I just saw it as where the future was going. That communications is really going to be one of two ways. It's going either you're going to be on a mobile handset or you're going to be on a VoIP phone, and it pretty much is heading that way. It was a much more efficient way of delivering phone calls, because if you think about it, the traditional solution was go out and buy a pretty expensive PBX phone system, right? That hardware you put in a closet, go out and buy a whole bunch of separate dedicated phone lines that you pay a telecom provider to provide. So you're maintaining all that. You're paying separate phone line charges. You're having to buy this hardware. You know, now it's just all through the cloud. So there's a whole lot of efficiency when it comes to cost. There's a whole lot of efficiency there is when it comes to availability as well, because your office environment often doesn't really have the same type of reliability as co-location facilities we use for the cloud.
All right. So let me throw a sideways question at you, because people like me in the industry who avoided it for so long, how do you approach people like me who are like, no, I don't want to touch VoIP. It's got all these myths around, the service and quality and stuff. So how do you approach people like me?
Yeah, so that's made itself better over the course of time, right? The equipment, the networking equipment out there is more and more VoIP friendly because more and more companies are using it. The bandwidth issues that were out there in the early days are rapidly going away. Bandwidth is cheap and high quality. So, all those things have made itself better. Or if you think about, in the early days of cell phones, how they were, and things just improve over time as the technology becomes more and more ubiquitous, it's going to naturally improve.
Right.
And now there's clearly VoIP is typically better quality than a public service PSTN type phone call.
All right. And Rafi, if I understand correctly, you came from an MSP background.
I started my MSP in 2008. I ran it through the beginning of last year when I joined Connected Voice. I was a partner selling Connected Voice prior to joining them. So I jumped from the light to the dark side, so to speak, and trying to help kind of inject a little bit of MSP DNA into the company that was already very channel focused.
Okay, and when you were an MSP and you were transitioning over to VoIP, because I'm assuming that you had a lot of the same concerns that people like me have, other MSPs, oh, yeah, other technology people. So in terms of, like the myths, what was it that kind of set those aside for you and got you to go all in on VoIP?
Well, we dabbled with a lot of different VoIP providers over the years. If anybody knows me, Marvin, they know that I try everything at least once, sometimes twice. Just ask me how many PSAs I've used over the years. We tried a number of different things. And, one of the things of being in where our MSP was based in the Northeast, we've had pretty good bandwidth for a long time. And so there was I saw an opportunity there to make a little money. In the beginning, it was a couple percentage points of agent fees and that sort of thing from the different vendors. I then found out about this whole white label game, which we started dabbling into, and I fell into another white label provider that really ended up losing a lot of money because they had very high minimums, and for a small MSP that was very difficult to be competitive with until I came across Connected Voice. And that's kind of what I found them as a way that guys like me that were doing pretty well for themselves could still provide a service to their customers that worked really well, reliably, a company that was responsive to support issues and concerns and was able to make more money than I was doing before.
All right. So you mentioned white label, and I think that's sometimes a phrase that companies love to hear, especially partners, that we can white label a solution. Other companies don't want that because they want somebody else to deal with the support. So I guess the question is, do you offer both scenarios, or are you just simply white label across the board?
No, we do. If you're a partner that is really interested in having the company handle all that stuff, sell it under the Connect Me brand kind of thing, you can become an agent as well, and just get your commission and move on. I personally think the opportunity is much greater as a full MSP partner. Your margins are better. You control the customer experience. It's a better overall outcome for the partner and the client eventually.
All right. So let me ask a couple of the difficult questions. How hard is it to actually white label a product with you?
Yeah, so that we've made really, really easy. We basically do a full white glove approach. We have somebody in our graphics department go out and look at your website and your logo and put together package and have it approved by you, and we just basically do all the work.
Yeah, so your portal is branded to you to look like your colors, your views. We even have some marketing material that we branded for you. But then on the really difficult part of white labeling when it comes to voice, unlike other solutions, is taxation. And the phone taxation is a beast if you want to do it yourself. I would not wish that on my worst enemy. But we've made that very simple, and handle the taxation for you on your behalf. So it makes it, you get the benefits of white labeling from a cost and margin point of view, but then you don't have to deal with the worst part of it, which is, the Uncle and Aunt Sam's out there.
Okay. So does that mean that you send the invoices on our behalf with our logo and stuff, or do we still send the invoices and have to put those line items on there?
It's like Burger King. You can have it either way.
Okay, have it your way. So that sounds good. Now, here's the question that I think most people want to know is, will you sell direct to the public at all? Because I think that there's some companies out there that will say, yes, you can be a white label, but then they're also trying to sell direct to the public as well. For the
SMB. When we get inbound leads, we pass it on to our partner. So if somebody comes to us, finds us on the web, fills out the form, they're an end user, we're going to find a partner that's close to them, and we're going to pass that lead on to them. And then if they want, help them close that deal.
All right. Okay. That wasn't too bad a question, was it?
No.
Okay. Now, I guess the question is also, what makes you guys different? Because there's a lot of VoIP providers out there now. I mean, it's almost like, and I'll be honest, I mean, that's one of the reasons I think I avoided it for so long, because there was just so many and I couldn't tell the difference. And, you know, it was like, you know what?
It's only gotten worse. This past year, it seems like the number of vendors have exploded. We're putting together a spreadsheet of a competitive spreadsheet. And I think we're on the second page, just listing out all the different potential companies out there that do that. So yeah, it's sometimes tricky to differentiate yourself. One is, we're never going to call your client unless you want us to. We're always going to do that on your behalf if we do that. We're never going to, you're going to make the money that you want, because you're going to set the prices that you want. That's a major differentiator. We talked about the taxation part. The other part is that because we bill on the call path, not on the number of devices. Okay. So it gives us an advantage when it comes to, especially with companies that have a large number of phones that don't get used. Think about nursing homes, schools, hospitals, that kind of situation where, if you were going to do a VoIP system that pays per device, you're going to price yourself out of that market completely. And this gives us an advantage to get into that. The other part is some of our integration. So we built, for example, an integration with Autotask. That is specifically for MSP partners to use. And those are the kinds of things that we do, to help, our MSPs, be able to sell more, to work better internally, you know, those kind of things. So those are the things that kind of set us apart. So you control your customer, control their experience, your brand, if you want, or you can gray label it if you want, and we handle all the taxes.
Okay. So I'll get back to features in a moment, but I guess I should ask, and I should have asked earlier with the white label service, do you provide support to go along with the training? You mentioned you had the white glove service, but do you do ongoing support after the fact, or do you just leave us out there to our own devices?
Yes, you're sent to the wolves. Our team is available 24/7 to support you as you're supporting your customers. You know, what I found as an MSP myself was, didn't matter who I was using as a VoIP vendor. It could have been a white labeled one. It could have been a non-white labeled one. They're calling me anyway for support, and they're probably calling you. And more than likely why not make more of the money myself than passing it on to some other firm that is giving me very less in commission. So that was kind of my thought. Let me make the money instead, since I'm going to support it anyway. But we're here to help you support what you need. So you step into a customer, you have some odd phone that you're not sure is supported by us. You know, we'll work with you to make sure that we can get that stuff going. They have a paging system that they want to integrate with. We'll help you design the right hardware that you need to do all that. You have a specific network that you like to use. We'll figure out a way to get that working for you. Obviously, we're looking for people that understand networks, you know, better, and not necessarily, that's not necessarily a skill set that's ubiquitous. So we try to help them out wherever we can.
Okay. So let me go back to features now, because when I went to your site and I was looking at all the features, there was one feature in particular that I was looking for, because my current provider doesn't have it yet. The busy lamp field.
Oh, yes. We absolutely support that. We have a very, very, very wide support of the busy lamp field, both for monitoring who's on calls, which is the obvious use of it, for being able to do a single button instant transfer to somebody, and for being able to do dynamic parking. So you can have a park one button, for example, on your phone, and you press that park one button, everybody's park one button flashes, and anybody can pick up the call. So those types of features, you need good BLF support for all that, and we absolutely do have that.
Okay. So I started with that one just because that's the feature that's really lacking. So in terms of environments, and I'm sorry because we didn't prep for these questions, but now they're popping into my head. So I hope that you're okay and can answer them. But in terms of the phones, I know that a lot of providers, you know, that I'm dealing with, everybody gets the same phone, and there's like no special phone for a receptionist in terms of having, you know, more buttons that she can use to put, you know, office staff or have a sidecar or things like that. And, you know, forgive me for not going thoroughly through the website if they're there, but do you have those types of phones for, you know, the receptionists and the call center people and things like that?
Oh, sure. We, you know, for receptionists, there are sidecars. We support all the major brands, by the way. So pretty much anything out there, IP phones we're going to support. But, you know, whether it's Yealink, Polycom, we support all the sidecars. Call centers, of course, you can use headset devices with the call centers a lot of times. And we have a full series of call center features as well.
Okay. And I also saw that you guys have text messaging.
Yes.
And is that for any line? So any direct dial number can have text messaging to that line?
Yeah. The purpose is so that you can take a company phone number that's not a mobile number and be able to have somebody text you. So, you know, you want to have a customer be able to communicate with you through text without giving them your personal cell phone number. That's really what it's for. And then you can interact with them either through our end user portal or through our mobile app.
Okay. And other thing that popped up real quick was the, I just lost the page. Sorry about that. I'll come back to it. I'll find it. I think it was the hot desk. Was that on there? Hot desk feature?
Yes. Hot desking basically enables you to, so we have some customers, who are like a multi-site medical facility, and they have people that go from one office to the other. They don't necessarily have a desk that they're always at. And when that person is at that desk, they want to just be able to press a couple buttons and have it be their extension with their name and, you know, all their settings. And so that's what a hot desk is, so that you can use one station to support many people.
Exactly. That's what it was. That's what it was. Because I've got a couple of law firms that have multiple offices, and the attorneys, you know,
yeah,
down here,
we have it a law firm.
Okay. Yeah. So they'll go to another office and want to be able to transition that. So beautiful. That's there. Okay. And I guess the big hot topic right now is Microsoft Teams. And, you know, it's that unified communications platform. And I know that everybody talks about having that integrated. So is that something you guys have looked at? Have you guys already done something, or is it on the roadmap? Where is Microsoft Teams fit into the mix?
We have recently announced our Microsoft Teams integration. So it is out there and ready to go now.
Beautiful.
Basically, your Microsoft Teams client on your mobile handset, for example, can look like an extension on our phone service. So you can dial back and forth, and then you can use all the Teams functionality as well.
Yep. So now you can have a team that is communicating internally on Teams, and then whenever they're making their dialing outbound, they make it out through the same phone system that they're using if they had a desk phone. Inbound calls, same thing. I take my inbound calls and they come into my Teams app and they pop up there. And that's kind of how, and it follows all the same call routing rules that the phone system currently is set up with. So it's a nice way to blend the two together without having to pay the additional costs with the Microsoft call plans that they provide by them becoming a phone provider. Microsoft has great collaboration tools. They haven't had great success as being a phone company. So we're bringing our phone company experience to the Microsoft collaboration world.
Okay. Now, I guess this all comes back to, what does this mean for the managed service provider, the computer consultant that wants to resell? What makes all of this, you know, more tangible to guys like us?
Specifically talking about Teams, if you're a Microsoft partner and you're already selling Office 365, you add those phone bits, you make money on that, you add the phone system on this end, and it becomes a more cost-effective solution for your customer, and then you're making more margin on it. We know how much margin you're making on a Microsoft product. It's not very much, right? Most of the systems out there that you're reselling someone else's solution, whether it's email filtering or it's Microsoft Office, you're making a few points at best compared to a phone system like ours, where you're making anywhere between 40, 60, some of our partners are making 75% margin on some of their deals, depending on how they structure things.
Okay. Caught my attention. Let's go back to that. Margins. Those are pretty hefty margins. I think the average is like 15 to 20.
Correct.
So you had mentioned, I guess, if we go back and ask in terms of the billing, so you price it by call paths.
Call path, right.
And you don't bill by device, where most companies do bill by device, or a hybrid. Some right. people will bill call path and devices.
Correct.
So do you guys do that, or do people buy the phones outright so that they're not a part of the monthly?
So we charge our partners by the call path.
Okay.
Right? So that way, but then we leave it up to them as to how they want to charge their end user customer. So you might decide that you're going to charge the end user customer by device, and you may only have one call path for every three devices, and you're paying us one call path for every three devices, but you're charging that customer for every device because maybe the previous VoIP provider they had was doing it that way, and you can cut a few bucks off of that and still charge by device, for example, and that's when the margins get really, really high.
Okay. Now, are you providing the phones, or do we go to Amazon or to wherever and buy them ourselves?
We are happy to supply you with phones, so okay. you can purchase them from us, and we're happy to enable you to buy them from a distributor directly. And, we have pre-provisioning in our tools. So, you know, let's say you buy a Yealink phone or Polycom phone, you just plug that MAC address in, it goes out to Yealink or Polycom, whoever the provider is, registers it over so that the phone's all pre-provisioned to us, makes it nice and easy.
Okay. And this is all in the partner portal?
Yes.
Okay.
We have the tools for this. Yes.
All right. So I'm going to be, I'm hoping to be on the webinar Thursday. But so the partner portal, that's probably another area where that can make or break the relationship, because if a partner portal is not easily navigationable, it's probably not the right word. that's always a problem, that, you know, it needs to be something where we can go in and see all of our customers, or, you know, change between them and provision phones easily, make changes easily. So what's your partner portal like?
So we have two tools that we deal with when it comes to managing the solution. So you have your central customer service tool, which has all your partners in it. It gives you really full control of the environment. And then from there, we have doorways into the what we call the end user portal, which is the where you're configuring your phones, when you're configuring call paths and those kind of things. So this way, you can jump into any one of your customers and change that all from that one central place. You don't have to log out and log back into another product. So if you're going through, let's say, you want to set up emergency routing for all your partners because you're your clients because you haven't done that yet, you can go one by one, go through each one and click through and set up the emergency routing rather than having to log off and log back on into the environment. So we do have that separation between the two tools just to make things because the end user portal is branded to you and the customer service tool is for your entire fleet. And it's the same tool that we use on the back end.
Okay. All right. And probably the only thing that just popped into my head again is analog support, which has always been a bugaboo, especially with faxing and stuff like that. How is your integration and support with analog lines?
So we have a couple of integrations. One is a standard ATA. So if you have, say, a paging device that is already in place that has an analog interface, an ATA will work for that. Then we also have a fax interface, which is a little bit different than the ATA. And the reason is that it's not a direct connection to the device. It's a store and forward. So if your fax machine is down, it's still going to collect the faxes. It's still going to actually even host them on a website that you can retrieve if your fax machine is dead. But then when the fax machine comes back to life, it'll then deliver that. So it's that additional kind of feature that protects you from the machine not being available. So we can handle the faxes. We can also do e-fax too, but we can handle the physical fax as well as other analog devices.
Okay. All right. So I should probably stop there and let us catch a breath because I feel like I was rattling off question after question. But did I steal a ton of stuff from the webinar?
Yes, the entire webinar we just provided here. So we have no reason to do this tomorrow. So there's a few things that we'll be talking about additionally. We'll go through some examples of some common scenarios are for an office, and you can to see how much margin you can potentially make. And really the idea is, and why it's keeping competitors out, if you're not selling voice, another MSP is going to knock on your client's door and try to sell it to them. So, and that's a venue. We have some partners, even some partners local to us here, that have been really successful of wedging other MSPs out of clients because they're able to do voice and others have not.
Okay. I'm going to stop asking questions now. So this would be the time for you guys just to, pimp yourselves or tell a story or anything that I neglected to bring up.
Tell a story, Scott. No. So really, I jumped into Connect Me Voice because I really saw an opportunity for not only MSPs to do something. You're a network guy. I'm a security guy.
Okay.
I'm not a voice guy. It's not something that I jumped on the voice bandwagon because I thought it was useful. I used it as a way to save my clients money so that they had money to pay for other projects. Back in corporate IT, where I originally came from, I did IT for some mid-tier investment firms. And every year we got savings from telecom. And that savings, we turned around and used it for other IT projects. And so that has been ingrained in me in some way. And so now whenever we need to do advanced security projects, we save the client some money on their phone bill. And we took that and we parlayed that into something else, some other tool to bring that in. So why not take that money away from the phone company that's getting paid? You get paid more and then you sell them something else where you're also getting paid for that too. And that was kind of my thought process around that.
And to add to that, I think, my view is ultimately, everybody, unless you're living someplace that's so remote that you can't get internet access, they're all going to end up on voice over IP at some point.
Right.
And the feeling is, if it's your customer, is it better for them to be using your voice service, or would it be better for it to be someone else's who came in supply it? Because ultimately, it's pretty inevitable, I think, that it's all going to go that way.
Well, I can tell you what finally got me over the hump was realizing that it's touching my network anyway. So exactly. So why not have me manage it? So
right, exactly. And if you're somebody that understands, you know, you put in quality network devices, you're putting managed switches in, you're putting a proper corporate firewall in, you're not just using stuff that you buy from a big box store, then you're going to have a quality network and your voice systems are going to run really well. And if you have a high availability environment, let's say we're working with a potential call center now that is the healthcare call center, they can't be down, any of that stuff, you know, we'll work with them. We'll design it with an SD-WAN in place to make sure that they have full call quality, no voice drops if their internet goes out, any of that kind of thing. So this way, there are other ways that you can bolster the reliability beyond the traditional, you know, having a SD-WAN, network connection into your office.
All right. Well, you mentioned SD-WAN, so let me ask this question. Do you guys participate in the selection of that process with the partner, or do you have partnerships already with some providers and things like that?
So we have, just like with other network equipment, whether it's, you know, we're not prescribing a certain firewall or a certain switch like some other providers do. We're working with them to make sure that whatever that is makes sense and will work well with us.
Okay.
And so some of that means that we get involved with, hey, here are a couple of vendors that we work with, and these are the ones that we think that would make sense for you, and then kind of help them make that determination. Ultimately, the MSP is going to be the one that actually supports and manages that, so they should be involved in making that decision of what the networking equipment should be.
All right. So you don't give, you know, too much preferential treatment. Do you ever blacklist anybody? Any ISP?
An ISP? Yes. No, sometimes we probably wish it was. That's certainly the case. I don't say that we've had a blacklist. We've had to blacklist certain devices.
Okay.
Not really blacklist. I would say that we've said that it's kind of a use these devices at your own risk kind of thing.
Okay.
Just because the products are either out of date or, you know, they don't necessarily behave well in an environment like this. One of the things that Scott was talking about with the BLS before, BLS are a hugely difficult thing. You don't really think about how potentially disruptive all that traffic could be on a network and what could happen to it. And what the network effects could be for BLS. That's why some providers don't do it. It's because it's actually really difficult.
Right.
And that part of it, it is why it's important to have a solid network for these kinds of systems.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just had another question. So how many data centers do you guys work with in provisioning?
I mean, so far as where we are actually located in our equipment?
Yes.
We have two main centers that we are located that back each other up.
All right, as long as you had two.
Sorry?
Said, as long as you had two, I've worked with a provider that only had one, and, oh, that was a nightmare.
Yeah, we have our main data center is right outside of New York City, one of the ones that's used by most of the investment firms as their primary and secondary solution. Our secondary data center is in the Midwest, off-grid, so, and they're different providers, so they have different connectivity.
All right.
And we have our back end is a massive, really expensive Oracle database that really is kind of the heart and mind of the operation. And it's really what makes the solution as reliable and scalable as it is.
Okay. All right. We're still in story time or song and dance time, whatever you guys want to bring up. Otherwise, we go to Florida man time.
You go to Florida Man Time?
Florida Man Time.
You go to Florida Man Time. I'm always looking forward to Florida Man.
Just if you are a, well, you're probably not a new listener, but of course, if you've listened to recent episodes of Podnuts Pro, we've had Florida Man versus the World. And Scott and Rafi and I were actually talking. They actually remembered a Florida Man.
I might have one. I don't know if it's a great story, but I might have one here.
Okay.
It's a recent one here from January. It was a breeder rejected this dog because it looked weird. Now she's internet famous. So it's a with almond eyes, a wolfish build, and an endurance of a sled dog, Siberian Huskies are described as graceful, powerful, whatever. Then there's Jubilee, whose buggy stare has been likened to poorly executed taxidermy, and the eyes of pale blue and black pupils reminiscent of crafty googly eyes. So, and because of that, the breeder rejected the dog. I can't sell this monster, is what the question was.
Okay, so the breeder.
Not a fantastic one, but.
It wasn't one that they, you know, bred within their own stock. This was one that somebody was bringing to them to be, you know.
To be bred, I guess, yeah.
To stud out or whatever. So,
yeah. So, yeah, if you look at the dog, I'll send you the link. It looks like a bad stuffed animal.
Okay. All right. Maybe I should find another Florida Man story because I feel that this is not going to be fair. Because so a Florida man was arrested after allegedly climbing a traffic light on a busy intersection and pooping on passing cars. This was in Miami, and he basically dropped trowel and defecated on cars passing below. Both police and the fire department were called to the scene, and a ladder was used to bring the man back down to the ground, but only after they made him use hand sanitizer. So, the man was high on crystal meth and marijuana at the time. So...
One drug's not enough.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. So let me actually, this is one where we probably should have done a live show. I'm going to, let me see if I can share this. I'm going to see if, tell me if this looks like a Florida man to you guys. Is that, can you see him?
Is that the guy?
That's the guy.
Wow.
Oh my. So, all right. So there we go. All right, guys. Thank you very much for participating in Florida Man versus the World. I didn't expect you to, but pretty good. So www.connectmevoice.com is where people can go and find out more information. If people want to sign up for the webinar, I will have a link. It is for ASCII members. There's going to be some ASCII promos for that. If you are not in ASCII, and you want to consider being a Connect Me Voice partner, you can simply email partners with an S at connectmevoice.com. They are on the Facebook, so you can go look for them there as well. Scott, Rafi, anything else that we should mention? Anything else you want to talk about?
Thank you for having us, Marvin. Appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you guys very much for being on. Thank you for following the flow of questions I had, not letting me get too far off the rails. And look forward to seeing you guys at the next ASCII event.
Absolutely. And, we'll be out in California at the next ASCII event in a couple of weeks.
I will be in California, but it probably won't be till October. So it'll be my first trip to that West Coast. I go to the West Coast of Florida all the time.
Tampa's the West Coast.
Yeah,
right?
Tampa's my West Coast.
Let me know next time you're in New Jersey.
We'll do that. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for downloading and listening to this episode of I'm not going to edit that out, but thank you for listening to Podnuts Pro. And I just had Scott Seltzer and Rafi Chamgachin. I know I butchered that the second time around. Did I do good the first time? I probably should have asked you.
You did excellent on the first one.
All right, we'll just go with that. And, all right. from Connect Me Voice. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes. We're going to have some more interviews and a couple of great segments, Florida Man versus the World. And until next time, holla.